Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is my Tuesday live show where I answer questions that have been submitted. Also, if you have questions, just throw them in the comments and I'll get to them. This is meant as a YouTube live show. If you're listening to this later, cool, or watching it later, awesome. If you're listening to it, I'm sorry. It's going to kind of be a bummer because you can't see what I'm talking about, but thanks for listening anyway. And today we have a few things to go through. I want to monologue about rescue courses and then talk about some testing we've done, and then I'll get the questions last. So those of you who have questions need to answer, fast forward to that. I'm sorry. I just need to monologue about rescue courses and share some thoughts I have. And one of the thoughts I've been having stems from me teaching people who have taken rescue classes their next class, like a class 4 rowing school, for example, or a rowing school or a private class, or an IRF course where I'm teaching experienced guys, not brand new guides, experienced guides who've been to a rescue course. And I'm hearing a lot of things that instructors are teaching in rescue that are definitely wrong. They're just definitely wrong. There's things that are suspect. I'm not going to bring that up, but there's things where I'm just like, people are being taught wrong things. Some examples of things I've heard is in the past few years, is that dynamic ropes should be used for haul lines when we all should know it's static lines. This is, I feel like, basic stuff. An instructor told a guide that they should only swim aggressively, that guides should never swim defensively, which doesn't make any sense. Like, you can't only swim aggressively. You'll be exhausted. You have to take breaks, especially in rapids. The biggest one I've been hearing has to do with these swim over the strainer tests. Because what I see in the real world, I've seen river guides give safety talks and tell people to swim over strainers. This is just bad advice. Like, especially like rafting customers, they need to swim away from strainers, not over them. Now, if you're not going to make it away from the strainer, I guess you could do that, but I just don't think it's smart. And I've done a whole video about this. I don't need to go into it right now. But I teach a lot of courses where I talk to students about strainers. And a fair number of them say, oh, you swim over strainers. Because they're being told not to swim over strainers in words. And then in actions, showed to do it and then do it. And so what sticks in their head is go over it, not away from it. And just a lot of other things. I can't think of them right now. I might do a whole Gear Garage video about rescue classes. But another one I heard, a guide told me that a vector pull is 10 to 1. But it is 10 to 1. It's not about 10 to 1. It's approximately. A vector pull is 10 to 1. That's just a complete lack of understanding of it. And so I'm in a course teaching something. I'm hearing incorrect information being told to me. This maybe students weren't told this, but this is what they left with. I mean, maybe they were told, the student was told to use a static line, but their brain thought use a dynamic line. Who knows? Or I don't know. But I'm just seeing rescue instructors teach incorrect information a lot. And I have to check in with a lot of times the owners of the rescue organization. And they say, no, we didn't mean to teach that. I'll make sure that gets addressed. And it's frustrating to me because I don't want to be in the business of telling people other people are wrong. It's not fun for me. But I think of all the information out there that is suspect. Also, like, as I see photos of rescue classes on Instagram, I just see way too many photos. And this is me, just so you all know. Now, this is a pet peeve of mine. If you're a rescue instructor, you can just tell me I'm wrong. If you think I'm an idiot, you can tell me I'm wrong about this. I accept I might be wrong. Just so you know, I'm not perfect. I make mistakes. I think my brain thinks wrong things all the time. One of them is when I see photos from classes, I see a lot of ropes across the river, V-lowers, telfer lowers, like tension diagonals, which I think are valid techniques for fire personnel for search and rescue, for doing body recovery. If somebody's pinned in the river, you don't have time to set up a tension diagonal or a tell for lower. That's more of like if they're pinned in the river and they're just a body and they're dead, that's the technique you use. If somebody's body's in the water, you need a quick, effective techniques. And stringing ropes across the river is kind of dangerous. So I feel like a lot of rescue instructors are teaching things. This is my opinion now. Rescue instructors, you can tell me, no, you're wrong. These are critical things. I just can tell you in my 25 plus years of experience doing this, like I've never had a rescue where we need a rope all the way across the river from bank to bank. Now, I haven't seen everything, of course, but I've never even heard of it. I never, like, it just isn't a thing that's a technique people I know that are doing out there to perform rescues. But because it's taught in firefighters rescue, it's trickled into whitewater rescue or it's taught to river guides and private boaters. So I'm like venting a little bit right now because again, I'm seeing what people are teaching. I'm hearing it from students who are in my other classes and it kind of bugs me. And they're teaching ropes across the river. Again, I don't think a valid technique to teach people who are just either guides or private boaters. And the thing is this swift water entry technique where people flop their bodies out full speed to go after somebody. It's just not something I think I ever need to do. Honestly, like I don't like exposing my organs to the river because I don't know there's a rock down there. Hopefully there's not. But if I'm in the real world and I need to get in the river to go do something, I'm going to gently lower myself in. I'm going to actually feet first go into an eddy and then swim out. I'm not going to leap out like Superman. I think that's good for photos and it's called the swift water entry. So people are like, oh, cool. I'm doing this rad thing. But I don't know of any example I've ever seen of a real actual rescue where somebody splays them out like that to get. And if I have to get somewhere or get somebody, like they seem to lower themselves in the water carefully and swim out, but not that. So I'm somewhat frustrated. Here's somebody's even saying this. I came from a fire rescue background and you're 100% Lowell. I came to rafting with a convoluted knowledge base. It's not convoluted. It's really good for fire and rescue. But for whitewater boaters, it's different. We do different things with different skills. And I've been saying this for a while, but I'm seeing it over and over and over. And so based on that, we've like a couple of years ago started offering our own rescue class. And this is a little bit of a commercial for our class. And this class is designed specifically for private boaters, kind of oriented towards people who row, but you don't have to row. And for people who are either currently rafting or plan to get into rafting on a private level. And we did three of these classes this year. I'm just so proud. They're so spectacular. And if you want proof, just go to our course reviews page. You'll see like the things people say. It's mind blowing. They're amazing courses. And what we're doing, instead of calling this swift water rescue, we're calling it safety and rescue. Because half of it, hopefully half, about half of it, is preventing accidents. So if you want to be safer, like people always ask the question, how do I be safer? Well, people say, take a rescue class. Now, that's how you deal with the problem. How do you avoid the problem to begin with? And so we do a lot on safety and avoiding accidents. And then we do real rescue techniques. We float down a river. We pull swimmers in. We see real flips. We deal with real flips. We talk about, we use throw bags a bunch. We do work on actual pin swimmer rescue, like practical things, not river-wide ropes, but like going and getting hands on them and one simple rope technique, like practical things that people will do. And I'm just bringing this up because I'm at a point where like I want to start promoting this class. I'm so proud of it. It's gone really well. Our curriculum is amazing. And I'm going to talk about it more on the channel because I really believe in it. And I'm just so tired of teaching courses and hearing the things people are told in other rescue classes. I'm kind of over it. And so this is what we have our own. And again, I'm going to probably do more videos about this because it's just, yeah, it's just frustrating to me. So let's move on a little bit. I'm talking about D-ring testing. on the note of D-ring testing, let's go Halder. Halder is an actual rescue instructor from Europe, and I've never met him, but I understand he's quite badass. One of the problems with rescue courses is that there's a lot of materials, tools that are introduced in quite a short time. People that quite often haven't had any river experience. I agree with you. Yeah. I mean, one thing Halder I've noticed, because we've we also have let me go back to this. We have this class 3 safety and rescue class designed specifically for private boaters. My last real rescue class I took, people were in there was firefighters there, there was boaters in there, rafters and kayakers, and just the general public, because they had to fill the course. Like, oh, we only have 3 people, let's just open up to everybody. Well, it kind of wasn't that great because of that. We're focused. Like, everybody in this class is into rafting or maybe kayaking, but it's a rafting-based safety course and rescue course. And everybody's goal is to be a private boater, like go boating. We also have, for river guides, a rescue 3 courses. And so this separates. River guides and private boaters need different skills and have different prerequisites already done. And so for people with commercial guiding experience, we have a WRT Pro course. We did one of these this year. It was 3 days on the river. So we went downriver all 3 days, you know, and practice these skills on the river instead of just on the riverbank or like in the classroom. There's a little class, there's classroom sessions too, but we spend about half of each day on the river. Mark wants to teach. Mark Hurst is somebody I work with on all this stuff. He's a Rescue 3 instructor trainer. He wants to do an advanced course next year. So we have one of those. And then we have an instructor course happening in September. Anyway, the one thing I've learned about working with Rescue 3 is there's just a lot of paperwork. And there's a lot of stuff they want you to cover that you have to cover. And some of it, it's good stuff. But some of it, I'm like, man, that time would be better spent doing something else. But working with Rescue 3 or another agency, like it's good material. Like, it's good content. It just, depending on the group, sometimes like, I wish we could not do this one thing and do this instead. And when you work with an organization like Rescue 3, which is a long-standing great organization, you do need to do what they want. Like, you sign up skills sheets to make sure. So, and it's important to them, which makes sense. They're a brand. They're offering a course. Every course should cover the same things. It is a long list. So you spend a lot of time checking those boxes off the list so that they can have consistency in their courses. Okay, anyway, thanks for the comment, Aldor. Got me on a side tangent. Let's go back to what I was getting at. So, but also like on the rescue track and just talking about rescue, I enjoy learning about this stuff, and I'm always trying to learn more and practice. And one of the things we did last week, Mark was here. We spent a day and a half breaking D-rings. It was awesome. Sotar gave us a boat, and we just set up all these things. Some of you have probably seen the videos we've done. And there's 5 or 6 more videos coming out. Actually, Air sent me a boat, gave me a boat a few days ago. I pulled the air out and I pulled D-rings off an airboat. And this is the video I just want to share with everybody. D-rings off. It's terrifying. This is the, I'm going to pause it right here. So that's a green airboat I have. This is at 11 kilonewtons, which is a lot of force on a D-ring. These air D-rings are very strong. You can see the blue Sotar boat in the back. We pulled all the D-rings off that one already. And just so you all know, when you watch this, this is hooked up to one D-ring. If you hook up to one D-ring, it's pretty dangerous. And it can fire back. And that's going to hit you. And I watched this happen. It would minimum send somebody to the ER. Like, it's a lot of work. You can see the GoPro on a tripod does a couple flips in the air before landing. And this tripod, in the process, puts the tripod. It's crazy. We'd already broken a GoPro earlier. And that's what it looks like when it just lets go. It's really fun to have a GoPro on these. When it finally pulls the D-ring, it just takes off. So powerful. So I'll share it again. I've got a bunch more videos like this. The takeaway, I just want to show it to everybody on this. The takeaways are, one, also, we did a few tests, took them to 2 D-rings at once. And once one D-ring blew, it could shock load the second one and break it. or we had both of them break simultaneously. And so even a 2-point anchor can come undone and fire back and hurt you. Like this was one D-ring breaking. We saw two do it. We did 6 tests with 2 D-rings, and 2 of the times both D-rings blew and it flew back. So my takeaways were, this is scary, actually. I don't want to be in the line of fire anymore. I would say if you're pulling out any sort of force, you probably want to redirect. And the redirect takes away like some of your mechanical advantage. A 3-to-1 is probably like, in a lot of cases, 2.2-to-1. You put a redirect in, it's like 2-to-1. But you can still ratchet in your progress. But you don't want to be in this line of fire when stuff's firing back. Also, like a 3-point anchor. A 2-point anchor is nice, but I'm now really pushing the 3-point anchor. I mean, I've always been at like 2-point anchor is fine, it's good. But seeing, you know, basically a third of them fail and fire the equipment back, I'm a big fan of the 3-point anchor all of a sudden. So I'm coming up in my, I'm working through some thoughts I have about this. I feel like, yeah, I don't want to tell anybody what I think, because I think there's some rules we could follow. I got to think about some more, like when you want to move to it's really hard to figure out because all D-rings pop differently, right? Like the Sotar D-ring, this was an old Sotar boat. The D-rings are popping at 4 to 5 kilonewtons. That's like, if 4 to 5 people are pulling out 3-to-1, they could pop that, right? This airboat was broke at 11.4 kilonewtons. I don't think you could get that force of the 3-to-1 in the real world. But also, you see what it does when it does go. Airboat, just to make sure everybody knows what's going on, the air was a brand new boat when the Sotar was probably like 15, 20 years old. So that's terrifying, having that come back. Anyway, enough about this. I've been kind of rambling on about rescue. And then I want to be clear, like D-rings, I'm calling equipment. So that's equip. So when I'm doing 3-to-1s or mechanical advantage, to me, that's equipment retrieval, not rescue. Rescue is when there's people you're rescuing. Equipment retrieval is just picking up your stuff you got stuck in the river. Okay, let's move on. One quick question here. Are you competing at Clackfest? I'm not. I'm gone this week, so I'm not going to make it to Clackfest. My original plan was to make it, and I'm not. So I'm really sorry I can't be there. I love competing at Clackfest, and it was a bummer that I had this conflict, so I won't be there. Okay, so let's move on to our questions. All right. Ooh, this is a long one. Topic, pinned kayak rescues. Okay, well, this is long. I'm going to try to read some of this for those of you that aren't watching, but if you're watching, you can try to read it, I guess. A few days ago, I was involved in my second rescue of a person in a pinned kayak. Both incidents were very similar. They happened at low water and relatively easy rapids, class 3-minus, but created dangerous situations. The kayakers could not safely wet exit because their kayak was perpendicular to the current and their head was upstream. Luckily, their heads were above water, but this easily could not have been the case. So yeah, this is when I was learning to kayak, I did this all the time. You get broached on a rock and go sideways and you're just like, your head's above water and it's very uncomfortable. It's slightly terrifying. I feel like that happened a lot when I was learning until I learned to lean into the rock, and it really only happens when I'm really goofing off anymore. And it's super unpleasant. It happens once in a while, but almost always when I'm just goofing off, like trying to rock spin or something. Anyway. As a rafter, I did my best to handling these situations. I was the first on the scene and following. By the way, thank you for writing complete sentences. It's way easier to read this because these are complete sentences or close enough to complete sentences. I was first on the scene and followed my training by first asking if they were stable so I could decide if we could take our time or if we needed to get them out ASAP. Both rescues were a success, but I'm left wondering if there are some key fundamentals it would be good for both rafters and kayakers to understand here. The 2 swiftwater rescue courses I've taken focused too much on how to get the empty boats unpinned and not have unpinned kayaks of people in them. This is probably too much to answer on the spot, but perhaps would make a good video. Yeah. I mean, it's really, just to defend the rescue course, it's really hard / maybe impossible to put somebody in a situation and then practice rescuing them. Like, I don't, like, in her class, I don't want to be stuck in a kayak kind of upside down in the water and say, hey, now rescue me. It's a very unpleasant place to be. So it's a hard thing to do. But I think, and like this exact scenario doesn't happen. I mean, it happens. It sounds like it's happened to you twice, but it's not something I'm going to train specifically for a kayak pinned sideways with a person in it, because it doesn't happen that much. It probably happens more on class 2 and 3 rivers where people are learning to kayak. But I mean, if somebody's pinned in a kayak against a rock, I'm going to move pretty quickly to help them, because they could quickly, it's usually not stable. Like something could change and now they're upside down. So I'm going to get my hands on them and stabilize that boat, stabilize them and get them out of that boat. That's just the priority. I don't know what a class would teach you other than like get to them quickly, like prioritize that. It's kind of dangerous. And pulling their skirt can change the situation. So if they are stable and you pull their skirt, it could allow water to come in and make it worse. It could make it better too, but like being super nervous about pulling that skirt, I would, when you pull that skirt, I think the big thing is like get your hands on them ready to pull them out, you know, or whatever you need to do. Like there's a lot of solutions to this. It depends on the situation, but make sure they're stable, make sure they're breathing, make sure something can't change that keeps them from breathing. And then all I would teach is like get your hands on them and get them out of that situation. There's techniques, kind of advanced techniques that take a lot of training, not a lot of training, but a lot of common sense, where if they're wearing a rescue harness thing, you could, if you have access upstream, which you rarely do, you could attach a rope to them and pull them upstream on the rescue harness. But that's a whole huge system to set up. And I mean, honestly, almost every time I get in a situation as a kayaker personally, I can get myself out, I just wiggle myself out. But if I'm a rafter, however quickly I can get hands on them, I will, and I'll deal with it. But just to summarize it, it's always different. There's not one exact solution because it depends. Like, is it shallow water? Can you walk to them? Is it deep water? Are they stable? Are they unstable? Like, yeah, it's just every one of these is a little different. All right, good question though. Thanks. All right. Topic, deflating tubes for stuck boat. Love the show. I'm a better, safer boater because of your sharing videos. Cool. Thank you. I was recently stuck hard, semi-submerged on a relatively small rock. I needed to stay in the boat for safety. I deflated the tubes as part of working the boat off the rock. Is there an order to deflate in, i.e.? What does i.e. mean, by the way? i.e. It's for example, right? Does it stand for something? Anyway. High side tube first, or do you deflate them all a little and see what happens? Thanks. Yeah. Deflating tubes is such an interesting one because it really works. I would say the first thing you should know with deflating tubes is you can't reflate them usually. When you deflate them, they stay deflated. So you don't want to deflate them too much. I mean, you can, but like just know this, it's not workable backwards. So I try the things first and then I'm like, hey, if I just deflate a little bit, I hope it comes off. You don't want to deflate valves that are under the water because water can get in your boat and that creates a whole other set of problems. And I wouldn't say there's an exact order. If it's wrapped, you know, I think about, sounds like it's just stuck on a rock, not wrapped. But if it's wrapped, I think about how do I decrease the catcher's mitt catching water? So if there's more tube on one side of the rock, I might deflate the other side to reduce it, like make it floppier so that's catching less water. Yeah, but I think the thing I've learned, and it sounds like you were just stuck on a rock, you just learn from experience. Like I've learned a lot working the Tuolumne in California, which is a low water river. You can barely get a gearboat down, and then low water Middle Fork of the Salmon. So just a lot of times getting stuck and testing it out, I do a try things out, and sometimes it slides right off. To where I can usually just look at it now and be like, hey, just let air out of that tube, it'll come right off. But unfortunately, it just takes a lot of practice. And so while you're learning, when you're doing it, just remember you can't put air back in. So try other things out, then try a little bit of air, and then you'll learn from that. And every time you'll do it after that, I think you'll get better. That's my best advice. Okay, thank you, Chuck. I.e., id est in Latin. That is. Wait. Really? That is. So wait, his question is, Is there an order to fight in? That is high side tube first. Huh, interesting. Thanks for sharing, Chuck. Cool. I think that's all I have for everybody today. Thanks you all for watching. I'm going to be on the Gauley this week teaching a course. I'm super jazzed to be doing that. I haven't been there a long time. Hopefully I'll have some cool videos when I get back and some cool questions to answer next Tuesday. So thanks everybody for watching. See you next week.